you know, what happens to you is fundamentally unconnected to what happens to me. In fact, we're in competition with each other. So your good fortune might actually even be my misfortune. So we have a lot of habits from that time, and we have a way of seeing the world that's deeply ingrained, that sees the outside universe as something outside that is certainly indifferent to our interests and maybe hostile to them. And to make that shift, it's not something you can will yourself to do, but it's something that the more people around you begin to take on the sense of connectedness and the actions and thoughts and ways of relating that come with that, then the more it brings each of us into that state also. Another thing that helps is when the world of separation, of maximizing your security, of planning out every eventuality, of getting everything under control falls apart. And when you could say when normal falls apart also. And because of all of these crises that are converging today, not just in economics, but in every realm, that's happening to more and more people at the same time.
Trauma is a pretty quick educator. All these things that you've built, it just kind of collapses. And I've been through that personal experience, not through kind of the economy, but through my own kind of mental health thing. Would you know how people are dealing with this? Obviously in the U.S., these things are physically getting taken away from them in very violent and legal circumstances. How are people processing through that?
How are they processing through
that transition?
Can you be a little bit more specific?
This kind of transition, because you talk about how these safety systems that people have built is kind of falling apart in their expectations, and it's really just difficult to see.
People start out by clinging on all the more tightly when they see their nest egg evaporate or their pension be cut. They don't necessarily get that their plans are ruined and that normal life isn't going to come back, or what they had always assumed would be their future isn't going to come. For a while they might even get more defensive and cling more tightly to the status quo. But then at some point they realize that normal's not coming back, that they're never going to pay off their student loan ever, or their mortgage, or their credit cards. And then at that point, they're ready for something genuinely new. And that's who I'm really speaking to. I don't think that I can, if people are really bought into the way things are, I don't think I can change their minds through force of persuasion. But a lot of people are now, the world is falling apart around us, and things that once seemed so certain, so obvious, are now dubious. And people are really kind of grasping to understand what's going on. They don't really have the vocabulary to even grapple with what is happening. And so at that time, people are very open to a new story, I call it, a new system of interpretations that makes sense of what's happening and where we're going.
It's interesting you say this, because it's very, you can feel that energy and how this is. Whereas in Canada, and particularly Vancouver, it seems insulated. People here don't seem to have that same priority and urgency. And I know it's coming. And we're all interconnected as part of the world. And so there's people I really care and love for, and I'm like, I can't come across as this really kind of unstable, change everything now, do as I do. And mm-hmm. It's just
Chicken Little.
Yeah. So how do we tell these people?
I don't really think if life is working for somebody, they're not going to change. And until the breakdown of our global systems comes home, then it's going to be kind of theoretical for people. I mean, not everybody. You know, some people can just read about the rainforest being decimated and it causes anguish. But, you know, for most people, like, you know, they'll be like, honestly, like, maybe I should care about it, but I really don't. Then they'll have some reason. You know, the scientists will find a way, or the environmentalists will stop it from happening. People feel complacent about it because it isn't really affecting their lives in any way that they know about. Actually, it is affecting their lives because life in a civilized metropolis is so much less joyous and ecstatic and fulfilling than what we're made for. But we don't really have anything to compare to. So, you know, we're like the frog in the pot of water that's slowly getting heated up. And the discomfort is so universal.
Yeah, it's interesting, Charles. I remember that idea of, you know, joyous and ecstaticness is earlier we were talking about what it felt like to visit, you know, Zuccotti Park. And for me, it was such a contrast from walking, you know, a regular street with, you know, just people kind of going about their shopping days. And then you come around and all of a sudden there's just this, you know, explosion of life and music and just openness and all the other things that all of a sudden it's like I forgot that that's actually what the human experience is like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think for a lot of people, too, they've been deprived of that for so long that when they finally experience it, if they even get to, they're just almost, you feel like weeping. You know what I mean?
Because
they didn't.
You're drunk. You're like.
Everyone, people, like, I think most people have had a glimpse of that. You know, you go to like a music festival or Burning Man or, you know, some kind of wilderness retreat or something like that. And it's like, yeah, this is how human beings are supposed to live. This is how we're supposed to feel. And look how easy it is. You know, it's not these, the joy and the exuberance of those places doesn't come because we've spent huge amounts of money and invented lots of technology to make it happen. I mean, you know, it's just a matter of dancing and drums and letting loose. You know, it's so close. It's just right in front of our face. And so we're filled. You experience something like that, and you're filled with this knowledge that, yeah, this is how it's supposed to be, and it's really easy. And you think, I'll never forget this lesson. But then you go back to normal life, and the routines and attitudes around you kind of pull you back, and it becomes just this memory and this T-shirt, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting that I think for... I mean, you make a great point in your book, though, too, that I think it's an important point to make, though, that, I mean, people have such creative energies and humans have such creative gifts that, I mean, for a lot of people, they use them in certain ways that aren't necessarily that fulfilling, but they have the seed of something so profound and beautiful, right? And I think it's important that when people understand, like, what is Occupy or what are they asking me to do? I mean, what they're really asking for, and this is great, is, you know, the signs all say, what is your one demand? And but it's becoming clear that their one demand is you, right? They want you to come out and actually engage and use your gifts and just, you know, it's not okay to be asleep anymore, right? We don't know where to go. Yeah. We don't know what to do, but we just want you to participate.
Yeah. That's really well put.
I have to unfortunately cut it off because we're actually going to do a live call into one of the occupiers that are in the downtown east side dealing with you know, housing issues and development. But I want to thank you for coming on the line and really sharing, you know, this perspective. Because I think, and the reason I wanted to bring you on and really have this discussion straight from you was because the passion exudes itself in, you know, in your voice. The film comes across great and your words, but I think some people need to hear it. And hopefully people can listen to this and kind of find their way and make it work. So thanks again, Charles Eisenstein. And where can we find you on the internet?
CharlesEisenstein.net, I guess, is a good place to start.
All right. So maybe hopefully see you in Vancouver. Oh, Glenn Chatton, want to say something. Sorry.
Charles?
She's a musician.
Yeah.
Glenn Chatton here. I just want to say how fantastic it is to hear you speak. And I'm looking forward to your, I believe you're coming up here sometime in January.
Yeah, that's right.
That is fantastic. Well, I will be looking for you, my friend. Everything you're saying is right on. I remember Bruce Coburn, one of my mentors, saying to me, he's a folk singer here in Canada, he wrote a song that's called "The Trouble with Normal is It Always Gets Worse." And you know, there's the awareness here is happening for everybody, and everybody's potential is starting to come out, and everybody's starting to see their own potential, and everybody's starting to move towards that direction of a creativity. So I really appreciate you saying those words. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, this is JP Chan, Sound Therapy Radio. We're just gonna take a quick break here as I read a promotional public service announcement. All right. Christmas in Clovertail. Having trouble finding the perfect Christmas gift? Come and find and visit the Gift and Craft Market with over 100 vendors. You're truly going to have the best holiday shopping experience. With free admission, it's the easiest and trendiest way to contribute to the Surrey Food Bank Society. Get in the holiday spirit and bring canned goods for those in need. There will be magical festivities, including Joseph the Magician, and make your own craft stand, perfect for those who love a handmade gift. The Holiday Spirited Market will be held Friday, December 2nd from 5 to 9 p.m. and December 3rd from 10 to 4 p.m. located at the Shannon Hall at the Alice McKay Building, Cloverdale Fairgrounds, 6050A 176th Street, Surrey, for all festive details. ChristmasInCloverdale.com. There you go, a community-based commercial message after all that discussion. But as long as you're giving back to society, I think there's a new way of doing things. So we're going to throw it back to Mr. Glenn Chatton. So amazing interview there. So what do you got for us now?
Well, you know, after this fantastic interview, I'm just sitting here in awe. Eric, thank you so much. It was great meeting you here tonight. You talked about meditation, and this song just comes out. This is one of the songs from my latest album, and it's called Rolling to Surrender. And I think the whole idea about surrendering is not so much about surrendering to an enemy, but surrendering to yourself, to the potential that you have within yourself. So here's this, Rolling to Surrender. Talk to Jesus, the Buddha too, Dalai Lama and Shiva, ask them what to do. To find the answer to life's uncertainty, it's not what you do, they said, just letting it be, just rolling to surrender. Just rolling to surrender. The only way to find out is when you let go of all that binds you to this earthly show. The kingdom of heaven lies deep within. It's not about possessions, hell. It's not about sin, just rolling to surrender, just rolling to surrender. By moving your mind to higher ground, that is where pure love will be found. Roll the energy that's blocked from within. Open up so you can begin again. Oh yeah. There is no secret, no hidden way. It's always been with you since your birthday. The more you let go, the more you get to see just how precious life is when you're letting be. Just rolling to surrender. Just a rolling to surrender. Just a rolling to surrender. Rolling to
to surrender.
That's
Woo!
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, what a great tie into just that whole conversation, eh? Yeah. Just rolls right into that
Seems
song.
Seems like a good segue. Good segue.
Huh?
It
yeah.
was a good segue.
I surrender. That was a good thing. I don't know. If I'm doing a protest, I'm not going to surrender that easy, but, you know. You know, this is for action. I came all the way here. I'm not just going to give up like that. So, right on. So, we have another special guest who's been hiding in the studio with us, Ariel. He's a contributor to Sound Therapy Radio, going to help in various means. So, I want to get your thoughts. As you've been hearing some of these conversations, there's a lot of nodding and yesing, and what's your thought?
Thanks, Jay Peachy. Well, I really relate to what Charles Eisenstein was saying about the age of separation, how my misfortune can be someone else's fortune, and I think it's kind of disturbing how youth today are used to that, and everything you want, you can buy. Everything... is this whole dream of wholeness where we are making up for our inadequacy by buying things. I mean, last night I was out with a girlfriend and she said, I really love Starbucks, their Christmas spirit. And I was like, oh, their Christmas spirit? You mean, their drinks are not too bad, I guess. And she's like, no, their spirit. And I said, do you realize that what Starbucks is selling you is this falsehood of intimacy and compassion through a drink? I mean, it's not real. And so that we can take these things, these products that we can consume and replace them for real human compassion and intimacy, it's sick and it's disturbing.
Yeah.
So I think Occupy is really bringing it back to the forefront that we need love, we need revolution, we need to think of people before we think of inanimate objects that can, quote on, you know, in quotations, complete us. They can't.
They can't
fulfill us.
Yeah, I think it has to be taken in context too, because even in small business, like, you know, there's a social exchange going on, and there's also a product, and I think this relationship, not only with the business, but all the values that are associated. I mean, small businesses are able to do that really well because, you know, mm-hmm. like, okay, well, that's going to, you know, Uncle Willie and their children, and so there is this, there can still exist in that. So I'm just wondering, even in large corporations, can we still have that? Like, I mean, you know, what's a good example of where that can happen on a wild scale? Like, I mean, Richard Branson and Virgin, is that a way that kind of global corporation exists with an individual and a certain value system, right? Because, you know, we're going to have to buy stuff. Like, this is not something we can get away from.
Mm-hmm.
That whole dynamic of the social system and exchange and, you know, putting money in its place, I think, is a big thing. So thank you for that point. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting that you say that, because, I mean, one of the central things of Charles's book is that, again, the reason he calls it sacred economics is not to get rid of money entirely. That money does have a purpose,
mm-hmm.
and that what's happened is that we've essentially allowed money to enter into too many areas of our lives, that it's essentially surrounded us by what he calls transactional relationships, which is where, you know, you give money to somebody, they perform a service, the relationship is over. And the problem with that is, you know, that's fine for some things, but mm-hmm. if that's all we have, we're left with a very lonely society. And
mm-hmm.
so the idea is merely to allow the more gift relationships that we used to have to come back into our lives and save the money relationships for the things that, you know, we need to buy, or they coordinate human labor over vast distances. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's completely out of balance. That's the key point, I think.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break because we're going to make a call into the downtown east side here. So just going to play a public service announcement. We'll be right back on Sound Therapy Radio on CGSF 90.1 FM.
Want to save money? How about saving our planet? Do you only need to use a car sometimes? The Car Co-op is a non-profit organization which is run by its members. For a small monthly fee, you can get a car when you need one. It saves you money, time, and the planet. The Car Co-op is located at 470 Granville Street. Visit their website at cooperativeauto.net for more information.
All right, Jay Peachey on Sound Therapy Radio. We've been talking about the Occupy movement, and there's actually a direct manifestation happening right now in the downtown east side. Pantages Theater has been, really controversial issue with respect to low-cost housing in the downtown east side. So there's a group down there right now occupying the Pantages. So we wanted to get the latest update from Richard, who's on site there. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Great. So what's the whole intent with this Occupy Pantages? Maybe give us a bit of a background, and also what's the latest?
All right. Well, the intent is to bring up the issue of gentrification in the downtown east side, the destruction of low-income homes and for the housing or condo developers to be building unaffordable condos and gentrifying the areas surrounding it. So we went and occupied and took the space and held it for about 3 hours, stretching a banner across the streets, and we had people guarding all of the entrances for us. And then, unfortunately, our contingent of downtown east side representatives started dwindling away because they had to go home and it was cold and sick and stuff. So we decided to leave peacefully. So it's actually over now.
So talk a bit about, this kind of relationship with developers in the downtown east side. And, there's the options of SROs, and there doesn't seem to be anything in the middle other than kind of going to condos. What do you see ideally as the type of relationship that you could have with a developer? What's the ideal developer or, someone who can develop housing that can meet the needs for the downtown east side?
I think that the government needs to be purchasing the low-income SROs, as they said that they were supposed to, in order to provide low-income housing for people. I think there needs to be a new delve back into subsidized housing for individuals, and I don't think that there's any real great relationship that we can have with condo developers, because they develop really unaffordable homes for even the middle class.
Have there been discussions with some of these groups, and it just not worked, or there's just no potential for collaboration, and the only way is for the government to buy these things? There's no an angel type of relationship you can have with someone that can is sympathetic to your cause.
I haven't been in any of those discussions. I'm actually not an organizer for this. I'm just someone who is participating in it. So I don't have the answer to that question.
All right. So, where's your kind of cause going from here? What's your general feeling for the vibe there? Like, I mean, a lot of people have left. They're not necessarily giving up on the cause, but
No. It's the feeling has been one of success. We managed to shut down a condo development for 3 hours and hold it. We shut down Hastings Street for 3 hours, so we considered it a success. We're looking forward to different future occupations and how we can learn from this one and go forward and do more actions like this.
Have the condo developers responded? I think it's one individual there. Has he? Did you get his attention, or have you just kind of stopped traffic without much, movement?
There was conversations with the condo developer, but I wasn't part of it.
All right, well, good luck. Thanks for sharing your story, and we'll kind of keep apprised with what's going on.
All right, thanks.
All right, take care.
Thanks.
All right, hold on, I got to press buttons. Interesting, because, we just kind of came from a discussion about collaboration and the potential, and maybe that's kind of a lost cause with them. So, all right, we're back in studio here. We're going to get one more tune. If anybody wants to jump in on the top, actually, before Glenn wants to say anything, any comments on that particular occupation or...
It's interesting. I remember I was following the Twitter feed, actually, for a little bit while that was going on, and it's always interesting to see what people are sharing with the hashtag Occupy Vancouver, and it was interesting that there was some people upset, obviously, that the blocking traffic or people on the bus, and there was a sense that the Occupy movement was hurting essentially the rest of the 99%. And I think I can understand that kind of getting in the way of plans is you know, it's not, nobody likes that to happen in a sense. Yeah. But at the same time, I think whose responsibility is it to actually become informed about why they're there, right? Like, why are they there? That's just a question that I think most people should try to answer. Mm-hmm. If they owe it even to themselves to look deeper and not just sort of complain about, well, they blocked traffic for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Right? And this, again, goes back to that point that at what point, you know, do you sort of get involved and to some extent? Doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but at what point do you get involved?
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks, everybody, for participating. Ariel, Ian, Charles on the line, Glenn Chatton, you have you got a 3.5 minute song. Ryan will bust in and just like break a string.
Yeah, Ryan always busts in.
He's pretty melodies in mind, but when you cut in his air time,
all right. Well, this last song is for the 40 years ago that started up the Greenpeace outfit. And if you look at those guys, 17 guys on a boat that headed up towards the north part of Alaska to try to stop a nuclear bomb test. They thought they had failed because they came back sailing, only having been about halfway there. And when they got back, they found out that the movement had started. And one of the reasons why it started, and this is we mentioned already, is the fact that music's involved. Because Joni Mitchell and her friend at the time, James Taylor, came out and raised a lot of awareness for this. And so this is a song about Greenpeace that I wrote that's a theme song for them now. Here we go. I'll try to do it real fast for you. Ago from Dicta, a ship set sail called Greenpeace to stop the bomb that had threatened the open ocean blue seas. They all stood together with courage of what had to be done to change the way we see this world, like a rainbow against the sun. Like a rainbow against the sun. Greenpeace in the morning, Greenpeace at night. Rainbow warrior is coming to fight for environmental rights. Fins the slice from living bodies, dolphins slaughtered by the score. Harmless whales, they're hunted down to create this oceanic war. Well, we must stand together to embrace the wrong that is done, to change the way we see this world, like a rainbow against the sun, like a rainbow against the sun. Greenpeace in the morning, Greenpeace at night. Rainbow warrior is coming to fight for environmental rights. Greenpeace in the morning, Greenpeace at night. Rainbow warrior is coming to fight for environmental rights. Fight for environmental rights. To fight for environmental rights.
All right.
How's that for? Yeah. I'm under the wire by 10 seconds.
Woo-hoo! The radio edit. Thank you, Mr. Glenn Chatton, and thank you, Greenpeace, for all your work. Ryan Fletcher from Melodies in Mind will be joining you in about 98 seconds. Thank you, Ariel, Ian Mack, and Charles, who is all the way on the phone from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And passing it back to Ryan Fletcher here as we say goodbye to Alex Cuba. Good night.